Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Hello everyone, good morning. Want to start off the episode by saying apologies if the audio is a little bit weird today. I'm doing some editing over the top of it to try and hide the heater in the background. It is actually cold. The last 24 hours have really been the first actual cold moment of the winter with, you know, in Fahrenheit, we're sitting around 16, 17 degrees overnight. That said, it only lasts today and tomorrow, and then we're back into lows in the mid-30s to low 30s and highs in the upper 40s. So it's still more like November weather now in January with several days of mixed rain and snow. We'll have to see if temperatures dip enough for there to be any snow that actually sticks. I know that this isn't unprecedented, at least in this area, as far as not having any snowfall yet at this point in the year, but it's usually because it's so dry, no precipitation, not because it's so warm. We've had plenty of precipitation. It's been raining every other day for the last 2 weeks or so, but it has all been rain. And even up in the mountains, the ski resorts are struggling. They are not open yet for the most part. And the ones that are maybe have a single struggling run available for skiers to utilize. But yeah, at this point, we'll have to wait, you know, a little bit further into the season to really see, does it get cold enough and precipitate at the same time in a way to bring snow? Or are we going to have one of the driest winters on record? We've had years in the past where it does not snow, you know, until late January, and then it snows until March, and we end up having a really impactful just late winter, and that may very well be the case this year. So anyway, as far as like locally here in the Western United States, that's where we're at. We'll see where it goes. Well, that introduction is timely since today's episode is based on the 8th episode that we did in the podcast on climate change. This is the last episode in our look back series. I think this has been appropriate to do around the holidays and when I was gone on vacation. I hope that it wasn't, too redundant. I hope that you found some value in it and reflecting back on these first 8 episodes. I know that for me it did. I think it was really good for me to go back and re-listen to those. It's a good reminder as, you know, right now we go through the daily sort of grind of what Collapse is doing in the news and in, you know, different research and things. It's good to be able to take that macro level look at things and remind myself what it really is that we're dealing with here. On the topic of climate change, it does feel like climate change is sort of the capstone, the cherry on top. It's the sort of catch-all. If the things that we talked about in the first 7 episodes don't cause collapse over the next 30, 40, 50 years, climate change almost absolutely will, to at least some degree. And climate change sort of seamlessly weaves itself into the other episodes, into these sort of baseline collapse causes, as we talk about catabolic collapse, right? Financial collapse, resource depletion, economic issues, ecosystem and biodiversity failure. The problems that climate change cause are the problems that we've introduced in the first 7 episodes. Climate change just basically makes them most certain to happen. At this point, climate change to me is a foregone conclusion. It just really depends on timing. I tried in episode 8 to be both realistic without being hyperbolic, but also without just catering to sort of the mainstream scientific consensus hopeful propaganda talk of 2100. I tried very hard not to do what some say, where they're like freaking out about, you know, a BOE this year and all of these different sort of like hyperbolic ideas of what the very immediate next 5 years cascading clathrate gun hypothesis end of the world in 5 years sort of talk. But to paint a solid picture of what life will look like at 1.5, at 2, at 3 degrees plus Celsius, and make it clear to the listener that those are things that we will see in most of our lifetimes in the coming years and decades. When we recorded episode 8 in 2020, it was the very end of 2020, the general consensus for the long term today, 5 years later, they say that it's around 1.3, approaching 1.4 in the long term. In the short term, we've breached 1.5 and even 1.6. We are on track to potentially breach in the short term 2 degrees Celsius, you know, by 2030, in just the next 5 years. If we have a significant El Nino event, which over the next 5 years we likely will, there is a very solid chance that we at least, approach that 2 degrees Celsius number. That's not a promise. You know, I'm certainly not saying that that's a certainty. If right now, having moved from an El Nino down to La Nina, we're still sitting in the short term around 1.4, close to 1.5 degrees Celsius, that's our new baseline. Our new baseline is nearly at 1.5 degrees Celsius, even in a La Nina. The last 5 years have marked a significant step up in average annual global warming. And with each El Nino that we experience, it seems to be an additional step up. It's yet to be seen. In 5 years, we will look back again and be able to say, you know, what is our short-term warming? Have we hit that 2 degrees? Talking about the IPCC and the goals that were set, obviously starting at 1.5 and then that shifted to 2, even in the mainstream scientific discourse, many are saying that it's potentially 3 degrees Celsius by 2060 to 2080. That's 3 degrees Celsius on the long-term average. Some scientists who are a little bit less reticent and speaking their minds more freely are stating that 3C is actually more likely to happen around 2050, which means that we will see short-term temperatures of 3 degrees Celsius long before that. It may just be that by the late 2030s or 2040, we may have experienced our first year of over 3 degrees Celsius on the short term, which is unfathomable. It is truly scary to think about. I consider in episode 8, one of the facts that we talked about, which was that in the previous mass extinction events, those ranged from 3 degrees Celsius to 10 degrees Celsius. Because of how rapidly climate change has already grown, and because of the effects that humans have had on ecosystems and biodiversity through other means, pollution, deforestation, displacement, those types of things, it's said that we're already in this sixth mass extinction event, or at least we're starting into it, right? But to consider that at 3 degrees Celsius, just by itself, the world's species were thought to have been decreased by around 50%. And we're rocketing into 3 degrees Celsius with all the other things that I just mentioned, the other damages that we're doing to the environment. It leaves very little room for denying that we are headed into, you know, an extinction-level event. Not necessarily for humans, as always. I'm not saying that collapse is human extinction, but for many species. We're already watching many species go extinct, many more becoming endangered or critically endangered, and that will only increase exponentially in the coming decades. Now, that does put humanity at great risk. We rely on species, right? We rely on the animal kingdom to keep our systems moving properly. And it takes a lot of hubris to believe that we as a species are going to be fine having destroyed so many others. There were some other numbers that we talked about that I thought were interesting, and I Googled to see where we're at today, just in comparison. Kellen was blown away when I mentioned that 12,000 people die every day due to air pollution. That was sort of a wake-up call to him. And I said, yeah, you know, if you Google it, it's 4.5 million deaths per year attributed to air pollution. Today I looked it up, and it shows that it's actually 8 million or more is the projected number of deaths per year due to air pollution. So that number has doubled, or at least close to doubled, and sits, you know, between 22 and 24,000 people per day dying to air pollution. So at this point, it really is speculation as far as what the future brings and the timing of it. Everyone's opinion is different. even scientists' opinions, right? Or the research that they do and the futures that they describe at various degrees of warming, much of it is speculation, using extrapolation, trying to input things into models and understanding how those things are going to affect other things and the cascading effects overall, and then eventually how that hits human systems. The truth is, we don't know. There is a possibility that the consequences are overstated. You know, I'm not going to say that there's a 0% chance of that, but my hunch is that it's understated. My hunch is that the fragility of our systems will be made manifest in a more powerful, more impactful way due to, amongst all the other things we've talked about, climate change. That said, I don't even want to make a guess at the timing of those impacts. We see impacts on a local scale consistently. Those are already happening. But the timing of when those spill over into being frequent enough in each locality or impactful enough in each locality as to impact the system as a whole, I think we're just going to have to sit tight and experience it as it happens. And just as I mentioned in that episode, I still today think that some of the biggest impacts that we're going to see globally is going to be due to mass migration. There's simply no way that vast swaths of the earth can be made uninhabitable without expecting that those people seek to find somewhere else to live. If there is an area of the world with 1 billion people that can no longer be survivable in the long term, number one, is it possible to even force those people to remain there if, you know, other countries tried condemning those 1 billion people to death? I think the answer is no, it's not possible to contain or restrain them all. And those people will find places to go. And they will impact the closest areas that are still livable or semi-livable and potentially make those areas uninhabitable. And that will cascade and those people will need to flee. And soon you have billions of people searching for other places to live and the places that are still livable seeking to make do with the fact that they have a massive influx of people in their areas. In 2020, you know, we talked about the numbers ranging from 1 to 3 billion climate refugees at 2 to 3 degrees Celsius of warming. And all of that, right, potentially by 2050, just 25 years from now. What I'm not sure of, and what's interesting to possibly note, is the number of refugees will depend on the populations at that given time. And so if we're talking about refugees in the year 2030 versus refugees in the year 2050, well, we know that many of those areas of the world, we're talking things like Western Africa, much of Asia or the Middle East, where populations are growing explosively, more so than any other parts of the world. And those are the areas that are more rapidly becoming uninhabitable. When we talk about the population peaking and reversing, right, that is a big part in many definitions of collapse. Well, forced migration in the areas of the world that are currently the highest percentage of our growth, and, you know, there being deaths in those areas becoming uninhabitable, people being forced to move, and moving into areas where there's conflict and people don't necessarily want them there, seems to be a rather large trigger for them not increasing their populations, not having babies as frequently or as often as they are now, which would mark a dramatic shift in population demographics, especially if people are dying more and more frequently throughout the world. Right now, we're at a point where, you know, 150,000 or so people die every day, but 400,000 are born. I do think that we hit a point in the next 30 to 40 years in which that completely shifts. And, you know, I say 30 to 40, it could be less, it could be more. But where the number of deaths increases exponentially due to, even if we're just talking about air pollution, but you add in all of the other factors, especially localized famines and droughts and severe natural disasters in areas that don't have the resources to get the help that they need, that number will rapidly increase. And I believe that the number of babies being born will rapidly decrease, and we will hit a point where they pass each other and deaths exceed births. And at that point, with that demographic shift and shift in population, we will, for the first time ever, see a decreasing overall global human population, which will likely cascade at least for a time before we're able to find some sort of equilibrium. Now, You know, I pulled up some articles. I'm not going to read through them today. I'm just going to read the titles and discuss maybe just a little bit. So one of these says that the majority, this is from The Hill, majority says climate change is hurting affordability, according to a poll. This is in the U.S., a Yale University poll from earlier this month, and it says that most Americans see climate change as playing a role in hurting prices and the cost of living. Pollsters found that 65% of respondents believe climate change is contributing to rising costs at least a little. This includes 88% of liberal Democrats and 77% of moderate or conservative Republicans. About half polled said that they still think policies promoting clean energy will improve economic growth and provide new jobs. While at the same time, DW.com, which is a German television network, has said that climate change coverage shrinks amid Trump's clean energy misinformation. A strong majority of Americans say they're worried about the climate, so why do they hear so little about it in the news? And yeah, with Donald Trump and his war against this idea of climate change, calling it a hoax, reversing climate change measures, stopping climate change research, and with the fact that the media is basically owned and controlled by conservative ownership, we hear less and less about climate change news here in the U.S. And lastly, the one that I wanted to talk about here briefly is an article stating that betting on climate failure, these investors could earn billions. Investment firms have put over $100 million into developing risky technologies that could cool the planet with unknown side effects. And this introduces one of the sort of last unknowns, right? The Hail Marys that are potentially going to take place in order to try and save the planet. We've talked about these at length, right? Different methods of solar radiation management, different geoengineering techniques and attempts. We've talked at length about how they would be extremely difficult to scale. It would take an astronomical amount of money and resources, that there's no guarantee that it would work, and that there are numerous unknown consequences that could happen as a result, potentially even consequences that may end up in a worse scenario than just letting the climate change take place as it will. The truth is we really don't know at this point exactly how something like this would play out. But we do know that billionaires or multimillionaires or whoever, corporations, are starting to take notice of this and put more and more money into it. It is quite literally a don't look up scenario in which the wealthy are A, viewing it as a way to protect their wealth, to protect capitalism, but B, as a way to even become potentially much richer. If they see a future in which humanity views geoengineering as the only viable option, and they see a future in which it's going, you know, these companies are going to have billions and billions of dollars invested into them, then I think in the coming years, they are going to see rapid amounts of increased investment from these billionaires. Elon Musk is talking about it, right? He's talking about creating solar mirrors and satellites and all these things. In the end, I guess what I'm trying to say here is, will it work? Is there a chance that climate change could be stopped or reversed due to these Band-Aid solutions? I guess it's not a 0%. Are there great risks with trying this? Yes, in many ways. The resources required, right? If it doesn't work and we've expended all of these resources to do it, we're at a net negative. And that's even if saying that there's no negative consequences to the climate of trying, just the added risk of collapse due to the expenditure of resources when they could be used in other places. But then there is the risk that just the same, it could cause unintended, catastrophic, cascading issues, right? If you're cooling a place too much or one part of the planet versus another, it could create terrible geopolitical issues and conflict, unintended natural disasters as a direct consequence. And of course, worst of all, is the fact that we're just covering. We're just, again, putting a Band-Aid over the warming that we've created. So if at any moment we can't afford to continue with these programs, if these programs lower the temperature by 1 or 2 or 3 degrees Celsius, what happens when, over the course of a couple of months, we suddenly can't keep up with them, or even over the course of a couple of years? If it was solar radiation management, right, and it was aerosols in the atmosphere, and it lowers the degree by 2 degrees, but then over the course of a year, suddenly funding runs dry or resources run out, or there's disasters that mean that we can't, for whatever reason, continue the program, Do we warm by 2 degrees Celsius in a year, in a couple of months? What if at that point, you know, the year's 2060 and the Earth would have warmed by 4 degrees and we're holding it at 1 degree or at 1.5? Do we go from 1.5 to 4 degrees Celsius in that short of a time frame? And what happens if we do, right? So there's so many things. And again, we've discussed these in the past and we'll continue to discuss them as more and more of these strategies come out, as more and more companies come out as winners in the space and in the race to figure out what it is they're going to attempt to do and the potential consequences. Anyway, that's all to say that I don't necessarily want to be super negative on these technologies. If they can actually successfully work, if they are sustainable in the long term, then do I think we should do them? Part of me says yes, right, to potentially give us more time. But part of me also recognizes that does it just give us permission to keep damaging the planet in all the other ways? Does it give us permission to just keep growing? If we could pair up something like solar radiation management or other geoengineering techniques with degrowth to show that we're only doing this so that we can buy ourselves some time as we do truly degrow, then I do think that that's powerful. We just haven't shown up to this point that that is something that as a society we are willing to do. The next several decades will give us a much clearer picture on that. All right, I've talked enough. Thanks for being here today. We'll resume our normal daily episodes as we were doing them before starting tomorrow. Talk to you later. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.